I
just got the text like 2 days ago, Ewan, from my Opti, so I can go in for my annual checkup, and I haven't answered him back because I'm trying to find who's the Hoya guy, so I can call my guy and be like, hey, if you guys can't get Hoya, I'm gonna go see this other dude.
So write to Mark. So just send an email to Mark in, or send a message to Mark up in the Slack room, and he'll tell you your Hoya guy is in your local area.
Oh, cool.
There'll be someone on your island. No question. Or send it to podcast@hoya.co.uk and just say, hey, Mark, I'm in Hawaii. Hook me up, man.
There you go. All right, I'm in.
Hoya will do it. Hello, welcome to the Mac Show. Yes, we're back. We're here to talk about all things Macintosh and Apple and iPhone and all that kind of stuff. And I've come with a real positive attitude this week. I'm going to be really positive.
Don't worry, we'll kill that fast.
Really positive. Joining me to discuss the week in Apple, a fantastic bunch. But Don McAllister, where the hell have you been?
Oh, nowhere special. You know, I've been still ferreting away, churning out the tutorials and stuff. You just know, sounds like I've missed a few good shows in the past couple of weeks. Been having a rant.
We did the keynote, and I think universally we all went, great idea on the key touchpad. Not sure it's in the right location, but well done. And then it just, when the prices came out, that was when it all went.
So. Yeah, I know what you mean.
So you've ordered one, haven't you?
Yes, well, it's one of those things, got to, haven't you? Got to. So, I went for I've got a 13-inch there, which I've had for, it's about 18 months old, that I use as my main sort of screencasting machine. So I need to see the touch bar and get familiar with it and incorporate in some of the screencasts as well. So, yeah, I did order one. It should be here in 7 days. So I'm looking forward to it.
Well, I was hoping I was going to get an unboxing. Never mind. next to him, Adam. How you doing, mate?
I'm doing all right. How you doing?
I'm all right, pal. Are you bringing the negative then today? Is that
busy? No, I don't know. Maybe it could happen. I'm not putting it out of the realm of possibility, but right. I'm a little concerned about some things this week.
Oh,
again.
Okay. Well, we'll come straight back to you, I think, and you can get them off your chest, and then you can feel light and airy for the rest of the show.
Okay.
And last but by no means least, our man in Hawaii, Doc.
Aloha.
What's been doing, mate?
Good, man. Just keeping busy. And Adam, it's Salvatore Ferragamo. You were so close. That's it. Adam knows what I'm talking about. Just been keeping busy and working, man. It's been great. And I got to, Jerome got his touch bar thingy yesterday. I got to play with it for a second. I can really see it catching on faster than you would think unless you got to actually play with it.
Okay. Good.
I'm excited about the touch bar. I mean, that thing.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah, no, and I want to play.
Some of the early reviews are showing that, you know, it is really useful in a lot of different scenarios.
Well, they're kind of mixed, aren't they? Some are saying it's a gimmick, and some are saying, wow, this is amazing. And it's not the fanboy split, you know, so it's some genuine tech journalists are doing both. So,
right.
I don't know.
I think what happens is if you can get something that right away adapts into your workflow without doing too much curmudgery, you're good. Like, I get it. And then if it goes into your workflow and it kind of throws things off while you're fumbling with it, like a 13-year-old kid on his first, you know, dry hump, then it's a problem.
I think where I'm seeing it, you know, being most impressive, at least initially, is in sort of text applications and in notes and text apps and things like that, where you're using the keyboard as your primary input. And now you don't have to go down to the trackpad to go up, say, change a font or change a font color or change a font style or something like that. It's right there, a simple tap away, you know, as you're working. So again, it's this concept of, I always talk about, I think workflows are more efficient if you can stay in the one plane, that one sort of plane of existence, either vertical or horizontal, Yeah, you mix them sometimes, you know, specifically I'm thinking about my workflows on my iPad Pro, but even there, those don't feel natural. When I'm moving from the screen to the smart keyboard, it's still very awkward. So you can be much more efficient when you're just all right there. And even if you have to go from the touch bar down to the trackpad, it's still not that hard of a transition. It's a pretty quick transition. And I'm curious to see if, you know, people who use the touch bar find that they're starting to use, as awkward as this might be, but the thumb on the trackpad to kind of move things around so you can keep your fingers up, you know, right there on the keyboard, near the keyboard shortcuts, near the touch bar, and working like that. I've never worked like that, but I'm wondering if the touch bar will sort of force that change.
You're willing to try.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's going to be really useful for not so much power users. I mean, we, you know, if we're using an application, we do take the time to try and work out what the shortcut keys are. And, right. You know, even if you do it a couple of times, it takes you a long while to sort of ingrain those shortcut keys into your psyche so that you can do it automatically. And then, you know, sometimes I set up custom shortcut keys and then I forget it, I've got them. Move machines and they're not set up on that machine. But that's for people who are actively seeking out what a keyboard shortcut is. I think there's a lot of people who don't even use keyboard shortcuts, and it will just expose an extra layer of functionality in applications so that, you know, the most context aware touch bar commands are actually at your fingertips. So, I mean, right. You know, I've used email for years and years and years. One of my most often things is the archive button. You know, at the moment I've got it configured, so I think it's two keys to archive my mail. And I saw a screenshot of the touch bar for standard mail, and they're right in the middle. Big and bold is archive, and I think fantastic. I'll use that all the time. I'll just reach up and hit, you know, the archive button, and that, you know, that's for me who's quite savvy and knows a lot of what the hidden functions are, but I think it'll just expose a whole new layer of functionality for people and speed up their workflow as well by presenting them with these labeled buttons that they can just, you know, see straight away.
You know what it is, Don? It's the What's people. That? There's two type of people that use computers. The guys that click into like the address bar and wipe over the blue line and press delete and start typing. And there's the guys that triple click and start typing. And every time I see someone futzing around with trying to highlight something, it drives me insane. I'm just like,
hang on. There's three types of guys, because the other guy who's the sensible one hits Command L.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, yeah, that's even better. That's actually true. I don't do as much word processing, but yeah, I think I do Command L every day without even realizing I do it. And that goes to Don's point. Like, I don't think I've ever put a mouse in that bar in years. I just hit Command L and did not even think about it as I was telling that stupid joke. It's just, some of it becomes so second nature, and now you're adding another part to your nature.
Yeah, but a lot of people don't seek out those things, and they never will. But now it's going to be exposed to them automatically, so they'll be able to benefit from you know these little things that they're only small, but they make a huge difference when you use them over and over again.
Well, and again, for things that are double buried or dialogues that, you know, require multiple clicks to get to that are then exposed on the bar, that's one whole element that can be explored. The other thing is for things that involve like sliders and other sort of controls that typically you'd have to move down to the trackpad to interact with, you know, things like a color picker is kind of amazing. You know, it's like it's right there when you need it and you just slide your finger, find the color you want, and then move your finger back down. You're not having to jump down to the trackpad, look up to the screen for figuring out, you know, the color that you want and moving that around. So, you know, there's a lot of really good applications where, again, you're going to be able to stay in that one plane, and it's a solution that's not going to get solved by a keyboard shortcut.
Yeah. I mean, it's super intuitive, too. So yesterday, I took a video clip that was about 10 minutes long, and all I did was go into Final Cut and just remove the cutout, the arms and the spaces. And I went through that clip about at least twice as fast as I would normally do it. And there's a new kind of like dissolve blur that tries to match frames as it does the blur. And I just added those in real simply, and it was so quick. And so two things, the touch bar really comes in handy for something like that in Final Cut. And the other thing, I think I have to eat a little crow about being mad that a 16 gigs on this machine in Final Cut Pro or 4K video is going to suck. That thing chomps 4K video like a fat kid in a candy store, and I go to candy store twice a week. It is amazing. I don't know how they did it. They changed something in Final Cut to make it fast as hell on that machine. Like it'll rope you right in. Like it's pretty impressive, and it defies logic because I have a 32 gig, you know, iMac 5K sitting right here, and I swear that MacBook's faster.
I think the touch bar definitely lends itself for scrubbing activities, you know, to skim through stuff. The only thing that bothers me is things like if you're picking an item, the touch and it picks it rather than letting you swipe. That'd be interesting to try. And the color one, I like the idea of the color one, but the only thing that is that, you know, all the color gamut boxes that you get are squares because you've got color change and then you've got light and dark at the side of it. And just going color only, I think's... This feels quite limiting as a thought process, but we should
wait and see. Well, you may be able to type left or right of it, you know, to switch between those things too, depending, again, it's all going to come down to how the developer implements it within the application. And there's no real limits, I don't think, to that as far as what Apple's done with the APIs. So, you know, if it's a matter of, you know, tap a button, now you've got the color picker, tap a button, now you've got brightness, sliders, you know, your hue saturation, all that stuff, you know, you can just tab between.
So yeah, it presents itself initially, in Final Cut, for instance, it shows what matches the pane that you're in. Because you know how Final Cut's a 3-pane setup under most people's circumstances, a 4-pane setup. So if you're down in a storyline, it shows you a set of buttons, and then you can move left to right to get to some hidden stuff that's off to the side. But I'm pretty sure you can go in and rearrange them. I didn't bother with it at the time. I was just trying to see how the usability would be to see if I wanted to buy one myself. And in some cases in other apps, like in Mail, it's kind of like a folder, then you hit it and all the commands are under there. So there's the management folder, there's the flagging and spam folder, there's the like reply all, which are sort of canned replies. And then so you get a second layer, if you will. So as long as it's adjustable, like toolbars, where you can move them around when they fit you better, then I think it's going to be fine.
It looked like in a lot of the early reviews, there was a lot of customizations. Again, it's going to depend on the app and what the developer makes available, but it has the potential to be fully customizable. And I saw some third-party apps that were highly customizable in terms of the buttons that you could throw down there.
Yeah,
and they seem to be churning out the third-party apps as well. So I know a couple of big apps have already, they're either in beta with the new Touch Bar support or they've already been launched. So it's good.
Cool. Good stuff. The cost is the one thing that we all balked at, of course. And I checked on the AirPods today, just come on, are they ready? $159 if you want them in the US, and if you want them in the UK, £159. That's some Brexit bend over right there. Wow. So
yeah,
we're 1-1 with the US. It's official. There we go. The time is now if you're thinking of traveling over. That's no question.
Any update on the rumor that they'll be out next week?
Well, it's kind of been squashed a little bit by a rumor that said that they were going to be out in November, and then another rumor that says that they weren't going to begin production until December.
Wow.
And I mean, that's if they're not going to be if they're not even going to start producing them till December, then that means I've got no chance of getting these before June.
Yeah. What do you want to bet? It's like pre-orders at the end of November, and we'll ship them to you in December.
Yeah. Well, you got to think if they've actually pulled them, if they're delaying them for whatever reason. I mean, if they've got to make changes, they can't start producing them until that's all sorted. So.
Yep.
That could be quite a delay then in that case.
Does this...
And the rumors, the sources of the rumors weren't that strong anyway, that they were going to be out possibly this week or be reannounced this week. So we've got a long wait in store.
We covered that last week. It was a reseller. So, I mean, the people in the Apple store
it wasn't even a reseller. Oh, it was like some dude asked some dude on the floor at that reseller, hey, are these going to be here? And he's like, yeah, they're going to be here next week. I mean, that's like walking into a Best Buy and like asking the guy on the floor, are you going to have AirPods? Oh, yeah, they're coming next week. And then throwing that out as like legitimate rumor.
Some dude named Terry. My friend's cousin's neighbor who used to work at a reseller who's now married to this guy that works at McDonald's that knows a kid that works at the reseller told me.
That's how I did it on the MacCast. Yeah, exactly. It's like I heard from my cousin who says he knows Johnny Ive's, you know, brother-in-law, who said that Johnny said that Steve said that, you know, geez, Louise.
A seance.
I'm not holding my breath on these, it's fair to say. I'm excited. I really want a pair, but I'm not holding my breath.
Well, you know what's going to super suck is when they come out, it's going to be like Apple Pencil all over again. You know, like you're not going to be able to get them. Mate, forget it.
Right. So, Adam, now's your time, mate. We'll charge you by the hour. What do you need to get off your chest, buddy?
No, it's just, you know, it's all the little pebbles in your shoe that Apple seems to be throwing out lately that are just starting to build up and get to me. And the latest pebble thrown out is this whole South Segoian fiasco.
Yes.
Now, I read a tweet from Andy Anatko on that, and I'm like, no, that I can't read as what I've just read it as. That doesn't seem right. And I got distracted by something else and never went back and checked. Tell us, he's been chucked.
Yeah, so South Segoian is like the czar of automation at Apple. He's been doing it for forever. Yeah. He's the most awesome guy you'd ever want to meet. Super smart. He does all the, you know, Automator, all the command line everything related to automation on the Mac is, you know, sort of it was in his domain until October. And apparently in October he got let go. So he was at Mac Tech conference this week and announced that he's no longer with Apple. They completely killed the whole department as far as it sounds at this point. So that's just another tick in this, you know, automation is something that developers and pros and all of us rely on being there under the hood. And so now it leaves this question, you know, it's not like just Apple didn't just let him go or one person go. They killed the whole thing. So does that mean, you know, automation is no longer a focus at Apple and with what they're doing moving forward, or just leaves a lot of questions. So it's just, again, another one of these pebbles that you can take any one of them and go, okay, that's okay. It's not going to be that big a deal, but, you know, not updating the Mac Pro, the South Segoian thing, you know, and then to a small degree, like this book, this $300 book they announced this week, like what is Apple's focus and what are they telling us as a community? And you want to stay positive, but at the same time, they keep throwing out these little stones and, you know, it's starting to hurt a little.
Maybe Sal trotting dog shit on Angela's carpet or something. And that's.
Well, he was always kind of a little bit of a rogue, known to be a little bit of a rogue at Apple, but this wasn't a personal thing. Again, he was told it was business, and that's my bigger concern, is that if this is business at Apple, what's going on? You know, it's just another little hint under the hood that really they're moving away from the pro segment, and you know, they keep saying publicly they're not, but then all of these little actions in my mind seem to add up to say, absolutely, you know, consumer is the focus and it's where the company's moving, and, you know, it can't cost them that much to keep that little department, you know, up and running.
I can't code for shit. There is nothing I can do in code in anything anymore. I could do a bit of basic 25 years ago, 30 years ago when I was at school, but that's it. But I use Automator all the time. I use Automator repeatedly, and I find it an incredibly useful and functional tool. And I can't believe that if they're serious, you know, if a world without Automator just scares the shit out of me.
And again, the responsible for stuff that's in Xcode. They're responsible for AppleScript. They're responsible for command line tools and automation that's at the core of the operating system. So it's just like, bizarre.
I mean, I know Sal. I've been on a couple of Mac Mania cruises with Sal. He's a good guy, and I love all this stuff. We don't know what's happened. You know, we just don't know what's happened. As Adam said, you know, Sal's his own guy anyway. But I've seen a couple of Twitter threads, you know, perhaps speculating that perhaps it was a platform issue and not so much a person issue or an automation issue. There might be, you know, they're bringing other technologies in to replace AppleScript, and that might not have gone down well, or, you know, there might have been barriers that they wanted to get around. So we don't really know the full story. I can't see them actually removing automation, but certainly retooling or using Swift or something to replace it is a possibility. But yeah, it is a shame, because Sal is such a good guy. And, you know, he really is very old school Apple. And yeah, it's a shame that he's moving on. But the good thing is, and he always was public. I mean, all his websites have always been open to the public for years. Get lots of scripted stuff from, you know, his own personal websites, which although it was never sort of Apple never said that, I think his was the only website they actually linked to, external website, right, that they linked to from within Apple, because that was all the source of all the automation stuff and all the scripts and the integration. So he'll still be doing that, I would imagine, so there'll still be information mm-hmm. there. But yes, it would be nice to know what actually went on internally, but we probably never will know what actually happened.
Sad.
And as for the book, well, I'm not going to buy it.
Do you know, I was really this week I was adamant, right, okay, look, I'm not going to be negative, I'm going to be positive, I'm not going to get upset, I'm not going to say anything. And then Apple release a $300 book that's bound in linen with pictures of the stuff they produce, and you're like, oh, piss
yeah,
off.
But come on, the thing, you don't have to buy it. I mean, it's an object, it's a beautiful right. object. If you're really into design, I mean, I know a couple of friends of mine who were designers and stuff, and they used to buy this most expensive magazines with these full, you know, glossy photos and really heavy duty paper. And they would just literally, you know, really enjoy sort of thumbing through it. It's not a book that's intended for, you know, your standard Apple user or even your pro Apple user. It's a book for designers, I think. It's a, you know, it is an object of desire for people who like that sort of stuff. It might well be a, you know, pet project for Johnny Ive, you know, like the gold watch was. You know, I really want to do this high-end, really beautiful book. So, you know, Tim says, go away and do it. Oh, we're going to have to charge $300. Oh, my.
Why don't we make the Mac Pro Johnny's pet project?
Yeah, well, this is it. You see, you can't give him a pet project. It's because he's such a powerful body there now. He chooses his own right. pet projects. So, you know, perhaps the he already might be working on that, but this is just something that's come to market at this point, and it does seem excessively expensive. But again, you don't have to buy it. It's not intended for everyone.
8 years to make this book. 8 years.
8 years.
I'm trying to find the right answer right now, but back when I was studying design and stuff in school, I know that there was a couple of different books from like Bauhaus, and there's Ossenpoff is a fantastic architect, and then your Weber books. So there's books out there of this nature that you used to even have to buy for school. I remember one of our books was like $180, and that's assuming you're getting an academic discount. So if you go and you look at that same book in a regular store, it's probably well like $250 to close to $300. So there are these design manuals that are like that, right. including some that are related to just typography and stuff. So these books do exist. And like Adam said, or maybe Don said, one of the reasons why they're so expensive is the quality that it takes to produce a book like this. And it's all your best designers. It's not like, you know, somebody just takes a bunch of notes and pays somebody to typeset it for them. So it's, yeah, I get it, but it's definitely not for the average consumer. Yeah, if I had $300 to waste, I probably would buy one just because I like this kind of stuff. I have a bunch of books like this, but at the moment, I'd rather buy two sets of headphones. So I don't know where they're going with this. And if you're going to do it quietly so nobody really knows about it except people in design schools. Yeah, and then it's fine.
It sends the wrong signals, I think. I think that's the main, the thing that's obsessing people.
That's the problem. You know, in the light of upping the pricing on MacBooks that everybody's considering expensive, and then you're going to come out with this that just looks, you know, ostentatious and grandiose and self-aggrandizing. You know, it's just like, come on. Like, even the text on this thing, like, available in two sizes, printed on special milled custom dyed paper with gilded matte silver edges, using 8 color separations and logos. I mean, come on.
Don hasn't heard our Angela effect conversation that we had last week, where I said, you know, there is an effect that Angela Arentz is bringing to Apple, which I think is about creating an exclusivity, falsely probably in a lot of ways, rather than realistically, because I don't believe that demand is through the roof so as to stop the fact that the 7 Plus is still not available in stores in a lot of the places. But I also had a conversation in the Slack room with Adam this week that, okay, I don't like what she's doing if that's the case. And I don't think that in the long term that will help Apple at all. I think it will hinder them. But she wasn't brought in to be a shopkeeper. She was brought in to do the brand experience type thing. And this thing smacks of what she's being paid to do. So good luck to her for doing what she's paid to do. I think whoever decided that getting Angela in to do this kind of thing is off their trolley, because I think ultimately it will have a massive negative effect for Apple, because they're trying to push themselves into the Virtu or the Porsche end of design. And yeah, they're great at design. They're very good at design. Johnny Ive is one of the best, but I don't think it stops them making shit, which they have been doing. You know, they've made under par products in the last year. That's not me saying that, other people.
My thing is all of these little things are adding up, and they're starting to feel like Apple's pushing themselves further and further away from the core customers that have been their champions and been the people that have been behind Apple and that celebrate Apple and things like that.
But Apple don't care about your loyalty.
Well, I know they don't, and they never really have, but they may be ultimately taking this too far. And that's what I'm starting to begin to worry about a little bit is, you know, they may turn around and find that they didn't care about it. And now they suddenly do, because all those people who have been the foundation have slipped away. And what are they left with? So.
Does Bob want to get a mic and come on the show, mate?
Huh?
Does Bob want to get a mic and come on the show? Barbara, no?
She's just filled in the class. So
oh, that's all right. She gets an exemption then. That's fine.
She's winning.
Nice. You want to marry that girl?
It's funny because like 2 years ago, this conversation came up from you and we kind of like butted heads about it. I teased them about it, about being pissed off about Apple for making the edition watches. And I was like, it's kind of much to do about nothing, let it go. There are people that are that rich and it doesn't really matter. And he's like, no, it just smacks in the core face of Apple, like even reaching something like that. It almost comes off as greedy and whatever. And for the watch thing, I was like, yeah, no, because there's watches that are way more expensive and blah, blah, blah. But for this book thing, I'm going to go back and eat my words. And I agree with you. And this is a crazy reach. And it's kind of a dumb reach. And they might not sell more than a couple hundred thousand of these. But
I don't care about that.
No, but just to get away with, like, we're going to make almost $500,000 selling a bunch of just books or pictures of stuff that we already got and you can find online primarily. I don't know. It just seems weird. It just doesn't seem, you know, when you got somebody that tries to do something that's so far out of their wheelhouse that you just wonder what is their motive behind it. And that's the part is, if you start questioning their motives, then they're already losing ground. And you don't want to have to question their motives.
I don't have an issue with the book or its existence or that Apple is selling it or anything like that. It's just, I think sort of Don alluded to it earlier. It feels like wrong thing at the wrong time kind of scenario.
It's a bit sort of, a bit tone deaf. Like they haven't really, you know, it's not the right time for it. You know, come April next year and they launch two new iPads, they launch a new Mac Pro. You know, there's some new kit comes out. So, you know, there's a lot going on. Oh, and by the way, here's this book as well. Everyone will go, that's okay. You've got our iPads and our Macs to look after. Well, to have a Mac event and to launch a single laptop and not even mention, again, that's another big failing. And I know they like to be secret. I know they like to keep the cards close to the chest. But throw us a bone. I mean, you know, just let us know that the Mac Pro is still going to be in production. We're working on it. You know, there's a big thing coming next year. But to have that sort of event when people's expectations are so heightened and then just to launch the single, nice though the MacBook Pro is, but not to mention any other aspect of the Mac range, it's a bit tone deaf really. It doesn't really help people. And they only need to you know, let people know that the Mac is still beloved, which, you know, they sort of say it is anyway, but just give us a clue as to what's coming down the pipeline. Just you know, open the curtain a little bit so we can see what's coming.
You know, so it's like, okay, here's a here's an iPhone 7 Plus, but you can't get that because that's delayed. Okay, here's some cool earpods to solve this headphone problem. Nope, you can't have those either. Okay, here's, you know, you want a Mac Pro? No, 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 we don't have that. How about an iMac? No, no, not an iMac. Okay, here's an overpriced MacBook Pro. Great. Okay, well, maybe take one of those if and when they show up. Oh, and by the way, here's a book. Which you can buy. Yeah,
which has taken 8 years to make, which actually we had staff doing this book. We could have put on production, but we thought, nah.
Well, okay, so now if you're going to do that, then you got to say, and we also got book staff, but we can't afford to keep Sal and his team around who actually do real work. And I guess it sort of reminds me of when your brother-in-law owes you like $2,000 and he just doesn't have the money to pay you, and then he shows up at the barbecue in a brand new Corvette.
Yep.
Oh, that's happened to you then, obviously.
Exactly.
That's happened to you, clearly. That was a very specific example. Let's just say, okay, so, not that this hurts luckily, or anything.
He's never going to watch this show, so yeah.
Okay, here's you can look at all this really cool stuff, but we're not going to sell you anything.
It could have been worse, and this is based on a tweet that I saw earlier. We could have heard a rumor there's a $300 MacBook coming out, and it did.
It's a three. You're right. In a way, it is a $300
MacBook. $300 MacBook, yeah, there you go.
I thought Don would buy one for a doorstop.
Deal.
Read it once. Oh, read it once. No, Don. Read it once and then you use a doorstop.
Don't blame me.
No.
I'm not hashtag rich kids of Instagram.
Just use it as a coffee book on the jet.
If it was £50, I might have considered it just as a luxury and
I'd have taken it at 100.
Yeah, I was gonna say I would have taken it at 100 too.
But you can't get the small one for $200.
Well, design books are about $100. That £100. Yeah, that would be right. £100 would be fine in old money as well. So that would convert to about $150. But that's £300 for me.
Here's the best news of all, gang. Though, literally, like a year from now, you'll be able to walk into your local used bookstore or even on Amazon and get a used copy for next to nothing. Or also, you know, these publishers, when I used to work at the bookstore, they come up with inventory remainders. So about a year from now, when Apple has like a metric crap ton of these, you're just going to be able to buy them all day long for cheap. So we will all own one soon, just not at this price.
See, what I'm thinking is like, the thing that really hurt this the most was like, I was right, Monday, I'm going to be more positive. I'm going to be more positive. Tuesday, they released the book. And you're like, oh, come on, I'm trying.
Muller, you win. Best joke this week. When is the Retina version of the book coming out?
But and don't get me started on this 5K monitor from LG that's currently discounted, but you can't even order it. What's all that about? You know, it's crazy. It says it's available in December. I mean, you can get the 4K monitor that goes with the MacBook Pro 13 inches. But you can't actually even order the 5K monitor, which seems a bit strange.
So the one question I've got for you is Steve Jobs up in heaven sitting there going, bravo, Angela, bravo, super, or is he sitting there going, what the f***?
Yes, it's part two.
It's part two. And I think it's just because it's starting to feel like all of the stuff is moving away from the product focus as much as Apple wants to keep telling us that they're focused on making great products. It really feels more and more these days like the company. And it's not that the profit margins never drove the company. I think that was a misnomer too, but there's this tiny shift in focus. I think that's happening where it used to be the product had a little bit of edge over the profit stuff. And now we've seen that slowly twist and just flip.
You all had a laugh at me playing that video last week.
Yep.
But that was
it. No.
Which one was that? I missed that one.
If you go onto YouTube and type in Jobs marketing story.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And it's him talking about the marketing influence over the products and not making great products and the craftsmanship that goes into that and worrying about the marketing element of it. Angela's been brought in. She's been told to worry about the marketing element. Bravo, girl. That's what you're doing. You're doing the job that they're paying you to do. I think it's the wrong job to do for the company, but at least you're doing the job that they're paying you for.
I get the feeling, though, that Angela's sort of brief is more to do with the retail environment, not the product so much, But the actual stores, I mean, we've seen so many stores getting upgraded and changed. I do think that she's been brought on for the, you say the experience rather than the product side of things. I think the product side of things are still, excuse the phone going off there, someone will answer it in a second.
But, oh, I missed that ringtone.
Oh, there you go. That was quick. So yeah, I think she's definitely in for the bricks and mortar stores, and because I think she's been taken off the retail store now. I think because she's been removed, or she used to be VP of retail and online. I think she's just VP of retail now. Ooh. So I get the feeling that she's not really a product person, but she's definitely a bricks and mortar store person to, you know, to update them, bring them into the bring them in more into the modern era.
I get the impression she's behind this. Definitely.
Here's the thing about,
but that's what she's getting paid for.
If we were still in Steve Jobs' Apple world, well, I don't think we would have gotten a MacBook Pro at all this year. Honestly, I think if it was truly product-focused company, they would be waiting for the right Intel chips that are supposed to go into that machine to come out, which is happening next year.
Yeah.
In 2017. We wouldn't have seen anything till first quarter, and he would have looked at the complainers and said, hey, forget it, we're product-focused. You know, we bring out products when and if and when they're ready to go and when it's the right product to introduce. And I think Tim Cook's Apple said, we've got to get something out the door. We have nothing shipping at the end of this year. We've got to put something out there. And so they went with the right, I think they picked the right mix. Again, I said this last week. I still think they picked the right mix of technology for what they had available to them to produce this machine. But again, in a Steve Jobs Apple world, I think they would have waited. I think they would have said, this is not the right hardware to put out. This is not the machine. This is not the best machine that we can make. It is a machine that we can make, and it's a good one, but it's not the best one. And I think that's the slight difference.
I don't know so much, though, because it's been so long since they brought out the MacBook Pro. I mean, there is a finite time to when they can wait, really. They can't leave it too long.
Well, again, I don't know. In Steve Jobs' world, I kind of feel like that would be different. I don't think he cared. I think he cared more that the product was the absolutely best thing that they could produce than following any kind of timeline.
Yeah, I think you also have to bear in mind, whenever, you know, we start talking about what Steve would have done, or this would never happen in Steve's day, is that it's a different company to the company that he had at the time. And as far as scale, if anything, you know, they're so huge. And they have corporate responsibilities and everything, which, you know, but it's just a fact of life, really.
But that's exactly my point. I mean, that's the difference between Apple in sort of what Ewan was alluding to, you know, Steve standing in front of the IBM sign, flipping at the bird versus sort of doing the thing that IBM is, you know, did at the time, which is we also need to be beholden to some other, you know, we've got shareholders, we've got stock things. And I'm not, again, passing judgment on one or the other. I'm just saying, I think we are noticing a slight flip, and it's not a huge, you know, I don't think Apple is all about money and not about products anymore. I'm just saying it used to be, I think the products had a slight edge over some of that stuff in Steve Jobs' Apple. And I think with Tim Cook's Apple, it's flipped a little bit. Hmm. That's all.
Well, that just might be, you know, the way it has to be for them to grow, to have grown to the scale they are.
Yeah,
I mean, to survive at the scale they are.
Yeah, absolutely. They're a vastly different global company than it was, you know, when Steve Jobs came back and made the iMac. I mean, it's night and day. You can't even compare it to.
Edge-to-edge OLED screens come in apparently on the 8.
Yeah.
iPhone 8.
No
bezel. Up to the edge screen, integrated thumbprinty thing on the thing. Oh, by the way, I managed to burn my finger on Bonfire Night, 5th of November. I put my finger against a cold piece of metal that I just put onto the pizza oven, and turned out it wasn't cold, and my thumb stuck to it. And I pulled my thumb off. There we go. Effectively.
Can you open your phone?
No, so that's what I'm saying. I've been doing an experiment. So it's now at 12 days, and it still won't open my phone. I don't know if it's ever going to open my phone. But
have you had to relearn?
No.
So
I've got other fingers already put into there. So, but what I've done,
you've just seen how long it is before it.
I've got. I'm seeing.
Has no one ever said out loud?
I'm going to see how long it takes before my thumb will reopen my iPhone, if at all.
Maybe.
Will
never.
It ever? Will it ever? Because surely your fingerprints, you know, the pattern of your fingerprints won't actually grow back to as it was before, surely.
Well, the pattern of the finger, you can't see it on my camera, but the pattern of the fingerprints is there underneath.
It's still there, right, okay. Haven't got the ridges. The ridges haven't...
They're not very prominent, but... But I'm interested to see. So I will report regularly about when it opens the phone, if at all. So
depends on if there's scar tissue there or not. Yeah, it may change.
But the integrated home button into the screen, apparently. So
that'd be interesting. That's kind of a maybe, right? I mean, I've heard both. I've heard both rumors that it's going to be the non-mechanical touch ID button, or ID button like we have now, versus just being integrated into the screen. I've heard both rumors.
Yeah.
I love the way the button is now. It's just, it's hella trippy when your phone is off and you press
Isn't that weird? Yeah.
and nothing happens. It's, like,
it really shocks me now. I've sort of forgotten what it was like, but whenever it's powered down and you try and click it, you go, ooh, oh yeah.
Yeah. It kind of throws you off. And then the first time I had to hard reboot it, because I was playing around with the beta, as you guys call it, and I got stuck. And I was like, how the heck are you going to reboot this thing when the button don't press? But it's a trick of using the side buttons, and it totally it works. But it was kind of weird to me not to, you know, be pressing on the glass and have nothing happen. It's a very odd experience.
It's a weird feeling.
Deepan reckons that Steve Jobs is flipping out, and there's definitely some resting on laurels going on at Apple. And then he's postulating whether Samsung will release a book full of pictures of exploding phones or not.
They exploding do that. I mean, if their marketing people are smart, they do that and just have a
I would call the so. Next phone Napalm or something. Just to be a
smart. You've got to say kudos to them if they did. They would get absolutely massive PR out of that.
Yeah, totally would.
If they called it the Napalm. Samsung Galaxy Napalm.
Can't call it the fire, can they?
Apple have removed 47,300 outdated iOS from the App Store in October. Huzzah! Wow.
Thank God.
I wanted to find a soundboard for Hallelujah Chorus here. I mean, the only problem is 47,000 is bugger all, isn't it?
Yeah. Yes, against 2 million.
Okay, kudos Apple, but a little more, please, a little more.
You know, it's really weird. This is the third time in a week that someone's brought up the Hallelujah song, and he died on Sunday.
Oh, thank you.
And but it's really weird to me because I heard anybody talk about that for the longest time, and then. After the guy passed away, and the two people that brought it up previous to you didn't even know that happened. But it was just really odd how that comes out, or your ambient awareness of how these things comes out changes after you hear a story like him passing away.
Oh, thanks, mate.
The most covered song in history.
Oh, you're talking about, that's not the Hallelujah Chorus, mate. I'm talking about Handel.
Oh, I was thinking about the song.
No, sorry, mate. That's okay. Is that only half of the fart app, says Deepan? Last story then. Phil Schiller says Apple did look at touchscreen Macs, but they found it absurd on a desktop. Mm-hmm. Senior Vice President of Worldwide Marketing Phil Schiller recently continued the company's stance against turning desktops and laptops into touchscreen-enabled computers, which some customers believe could be the advantageous additions to the Mac OS platform.
I'm in agreement with that.
I think it's too early still yet, too. Like, you know, maybe for Emma, or even as early as, like, Ellis's lot. What is Ellis, 13 now?
Yeah.
Yeah, so maybe from his crew forward, once they get to their 21, we might be ready for that. Right now, no. I spent the day playing with the fake iMac knockoff that comes to the table, Surface
Microsoft
Monster.
Surface Studio.
And it's gimmicky, but it's kludgy as all get. Messing with the little freaking twirly thing to adjust your brushes as you're trying to select stuff out in a photo. And then even when you bring it down to like the right angle, trying to just manipulate that thing, it's weird, you know, and maybe it's because I've been trained to work on a 45 or 90 degree plane for so long that it just doesn't match. But it just seems like your hand and the little wheelie thing in the pin is in the way more than it's useful at times. And it didn't feel like an oversized iPad Pro, which I thought it would feel like. It didn't. It's just a weird thing because you can't go all the way flat. And in the vertical plane, you don't actually have that much control over the angle, believe it or not. Like, it's not how you would assume it. You have to go play with one and you'll get exactly what I'm saying. So I agree. It's I don't think we're ready for that yet. Even though Microsoft's been doing it kind of half-heartedly for, what, 2.5, 3 years now, I still don't think we're
ready. I don't agree with the touchscreen iMac, but I do agree with the touchscreen laptop. I can get that because it's close. The proximity's there. Whereas, you know, my monitors here are beyond my reach.
I still don't think it makes sense. And this is coming from someone who loves his iPad Pro with Magic Keyboard. I use that thing all the time. But I can guarantee you the worst experience that I have on that when using it is when I'm using an app. Like, I take notes on it a lot, and I use Omni Outliner. And to have to reach up to, like, select something and move something around, and that it's that moving of planes, it works. It's fine. It's great. But it's very awkward, and it's never gotten comfortable, and it's never felt natural, and it's never been a normal thing. You know, the more I can stay either on the keyboard or on the screen, the better off I feel about that experience. So,
yeah, I think it'd be weird for you. I'm with you, Adam, and my setup is really weird because I consist of this in one hand, and keyboard in the middle. Hey, you know what I mean? Like, because I'm ambidextrous, I use trackpad, keyboard, and mouse all simultaneously. And, like, letting go of all of that control to go up and put fingerprints all over the screen, which is my second pet peeve, I can't stand when people touch my screen.
How are you using the trackpad and the mouse at the same time? Because they switch off.
No. So, because sometimes, like, I'm doing something with the mouse, right? And then you got to use a better touchpad tool. So I have a bunch of gestures that kind of like run scripts or do automated tasks, or you can do all kinds of stuff. I've mentioned about 100 times in the show, better touchpad tool. And if you want to know anything about that, I think Don did a show on it, and Brett Terpstra is a freaking freak on it. So between those two guys, you can figure it out. It's badass.
It's just called, better touch tool, right?
Yeah. Sorry. I can't speak English today.
I don't know. I'm just asking. I didn't know if they have a different version for touchpads or not.
No, it's better touch tool. You can do some pretty wicked stuff with that guy.
Is it in my app store?
I think they're not allowed to. Hold on. I'm going to give you the link right now.
You got to go online because it does too low level stuff, I think, to be in the app store.
Yeah, no. But
going back to the touchscreen, you know, on a laptop, I think Doc's right. It's a generational thing. I think it might be different, you know, when kids of today who've only really used iPads and iPhones as their primary computing device, and they want to sort of go to a desktop machine, they might feel it. But I think for us that have always used a desktop, it's just it's like a reach too far, really, isn't it? It is awkward. And I found the same as Adam. You know, if I'm using an iPad with a keyboard, it feels really wrong to actually reach up to the screen to do something. So I think for the where we are at the moment, I think Apple are probably taking the right route for their current market anyway.
But here's the thing. Once we move beyond the keyboard, I think Apple, what they've recognized is we're going to move beyond the keyboard. You know, there's not going to be this combination thing. So you're talking about the next generation. The next generation is going to have, you know, augmented reality stuff. They're going to have voice control. They're going to have touch screens. Keyboards are going to be like, why would you touch anything? Blah.
Yeah, they're so gross and dirty. I think, you know, Apple's jump is going to be different because, like, everyone's on the touch thing. Apple's jump is going to be where it's follow your eyes like on an Apache. Like, you can kind of just look at stuff and then nod your head.
You know what the future's going to be like? It's going to be like that scene in Back to the Future 2, you know, where he goes up to the gunslinging, you know, like video game, and he plays it, and then the kids look at him and go, "You have to use your hands? Ew, that's like a baby toy."
No, the problem you've got with the eye functioning one, though, Doc, is every time you start to try and do any serious piece of work, it's going to pick up that your eyes constantly flip back over to your porn screen. That's it, then.
I hope you can't hear that.
Someone's got a brain going by or something.
Yeah, no, I heard that.
It's in the other room. I can't get to it.
Bronwyn has put in the chat room, Apple 2016, no touchscreens. Apple 2018, first touchscreen Mac. Best Mac we've ever made.
Yes, that is right up their alley.
Good girl.
That could happen too.
Spot on. This podcast and all these is brought to you by UK2. Please support them. They're absolutely fantastic. You've heard this every single week, but please, please, please take the time to write out to UK2 on Twitter, at UK2. Thanks for supporting at British Tech, because it means worlds to us. There's offer codes. You know where they are, britishtechnetwork.com/sponsors. And you can sign into your account if you're a returning customer just using /UK2. Please, please keep doing that, because they love us and we love them. And it's a big loving. And also, look after Hoya. Doc said right there at the top of the show, he's going to go to an optician's, but he's going to find out if there's a Hoya bloke nearby. All you got to do is get in touch with Mark that keeps coming in here. He's Smark Couture on Twitter, or you can look at Hoya_UK on Twitter, or you can send a tweet, an email to podcast@hoya.co.uk, which Doc's going to do, and Mark's going to sort out his local Hoya dude in Hawaii, and he's going to be there for his screen fitting and stuff like that. There you go. Simple as that. And if you get to the end of that process, they don't keep your email so they can keep marketing to you. They get rid of it if you don't want them to have it. But if you get to the end of the whole fitting process, you go, well, you know, sorry, it's not for me. They go, yep, that's fine, and they walk away. And if you've got framed glasses like Don, keep watching, because after Christmas, you'll be seeing a video of me going and getting my face measured for their new Uniku glasses, which are 3D printed, custom made for my face after a 3D scan of my face. They're going to be, I can't wait for that. I'm going to say I'm so excited about getting those. And I haven't worn rimmed glasses probably for about 4 years, 5 years. So I'm really chuffed, really looking forward to it. Right, time for the cool thing. Donny boy starts off.
Yeah, I was going to suggest something which has already been picked. I think Adam picked it last week, apparently, which was the Touche thing, which was the touch bar simulator.
No,
but seeing as that's already been picked.
I didn't, Don.
Pardon?
I did not. I picked the GitHub project, which was you had to kind of do yourself. So.
Oh, right. Oh, well, this one is, actually, I haven't got the URL in front of me now, but I'm sure we can dig that out and put it on the show notes. But, okay, well, it's a thing called Touche or Touchy.
Yeah, it's from
Daniel Jalkut from
Red Sweater.
Red Sweater.
Yeah, Daniel's the guy who does Mars edits and a few other applications as well. And basically, it's from as far as I can see, a fully functional touch bar emulator that sits on your screen. You can take snapshots from it, but it actually just works, and you can use your mouse to touch the buttons and to do the slider and everything. So if you want to get a feel for how the touch bar is actually going to work once they release it on, you know, every Mac, because I think they will release it on every Mac eventually, even with external keyboards. It's a really, really nice implementation of, you can't get it through the Mac App Store. You have to go to Daniel's site, but it's free. That's a donation worth thing. So you can have a go, download it. You do need the latest version of Sierra, Mac OS Sierra, and it's a specific build you have to get. But there's also a link to get the build on Daniel's website as well. But I play with it, and I thought it was absolutely brilliant. So you can have it on the screen, load up an application that supports Touch Bar, and all the keys will appear, and you can change all the keys, and you can press all the keys, and you can slide the keys with your mouse. Really good. Well worth a try.
Excellent, mate. Brilliant. I'm going to give that a go, definitely, because I want to see what it's like, especially with Photoshop.
Yeah, well, it's going to be a lifesaver for me because obviously I'll need to incorporate the touch bar into my screencasts. And I hate shooting live video. It's such a pain, you know. But I can use this utility now and capture the screen because it floats on the screen. So I'll be able to sort of demonstrate. And in the future, as more and more apps come out with touch bar support, I'll be able to incorporate that into the screencast. So I'm well chuffed. So I made a donation to the thing because I'm going to make some great use out of it.
Just as a thought, can you integrate with that Touche app with your trackpad?
In what way? Oh, to use your trackpad?
If you got a scroll.
Well, you just, I mean, I didn't, I was actually using my Wacom stylus So I just use that as a mouse pointer. So yeah, it's just basically anything you use to drive your mouse, you can use that touche thing.
That might be interesting if you can press and hold and drag left and right and
possibly.
Daniel, if you're listening.
I'm sure it probably works as it is. As I say, as long as you use your mouse pointer, it you can drag and you can press and you can touch.
Cool. Adam, what have you got?
This is an exciting day because I'm going to tell you about something that was released less than 24 hours ago, something that I have been waiting on for a very, very long time, and it is Spark Mail application. A lot of people know it on iOS. It's actually my main mail app on iOS, and I've been waiting forever for the Mac version to come out. They are signing up people for the Mac beta right now. So if you want to try out Spark for Mac, which I think is an awesome, awesome email client from the guys over at Readl, the beta is going to be available. You can sign up to get notified and get that.
So give me the pitch here. Why should I buy this or use this over at mail app?
Because they have some amazing UI, AI kind of stuff in there that will help do things. Actually, Apple kind of stole one of their key features, which was one of my favorites for the new mail app, I think, in Sierra, which is it will automatically like recognize where you save certain emails to folders. So if you have your folder organization in there, excuse me, it will know that, you know, I always put certain emails in certain Maccast folders. And when I go to move them there, it will automatically say, okay, is this where you want to move them to? And it's right there. So that was something a Spark had at first. Another feature that I like is they have a delay email box. So if something comes into your inbox, you know you need to get to it, but you don't have time to deal with it, you can automatically send it to re-show up in your inbox in, you know, 30 minutes, 15 minutes, anything like that. Just the overall user interface and layout is great. And it's just a much more efficient for me email application than Apple's built-in one. Mm. So, and the guys at Readl just do good stuff. You know, they think about the stuff. They've been working on the Mac app for a long time. Again, because rather than getting the product out, because a lot of people have been asking for this, they just kept saying, look, we got to make it absolutely right and perfect. So I haven't had much time with it yet, but I'm hoping to get time on it and I'll give you more details as to what's going on, but just been waiting on it for a long time. So if you want to get in on the beta, sign up now.
Any ideas on price for it or?
Not at the moment, no.
Okay, that's good.
Again, they're just getting the beta out. They're looking for feedback. I think they want to get it in the hands of early testers and let people try it out and see what they think.
Cool. Doc, what have you got for us?
I'm going to go out and call on MacFund's new program called Lumiere. I never can say it right. It's Luminar. Okay, there we go. Luminar. Anyway, so basically, I think they set out, it's hard to know what they think because these guys are like way too smart for normal people, but I think they set out to create a replacement for Aperture.
Mm-hmm.
And it's freaking incredible. Like the pre-order was all the way up until this morning and then the real app shipped this morning. So I started at 6 and up until 9, right when the show started. And I literally sat down for like 3-4 hours just pressing things and playing with photos, and I'm mind blown by how fast it is. It's going to allow someone that doesn't know how to do it the way we know how to do it, Ewan, to get the same results that maybe we can get. But even if you do know how to do it, then you can get even greater results. So like, for instance, your adjustment layers can all be individual layers. So you can do one layer that just covers vibrance, and then you can mask out parts of the vibrance that doesn't work for another part of the layer. You can do split toning. You can put gradient filters that you should have put on the camera when you were taking it, but if you forgot, you can do polarizing. Yeah, it was crazy. So I did some photos this weekend for my niece for a Christmas card, and it was just the best time that I could take them.
But show those?
Yeah, you're okay. The sky was horrible. And then so using some of the split toning features in here and masking, I was able to go in and enhance the sky and the grass, but not really over exaggerate her skin, because the 70-year-old skin is perfect. You know, it would look great on an old person, but you know, when you're doing some editing to a 7-year-old, to be able to pull that detail out, but without wrecking her face, you know, or making her look like an alien or a Trump kid and not a cute little Okinawan girl. Amazing. And much faster than what I would have done if I had to do this, you know, in Photoshop, or I did it from Lightroom, so I can't speak on it versus Lightroom, but it's pretty incredible. So if you're not down to go spend a lot of money on Lightroom, or you just really miss Aperture, this is it. This is the guy. They hit a home run. And MacFun is amazing. They've been a sponsor for the show, of course. But I don't know, where do you guys come up with this stuff?
Yeah, no, there's some good. I've had a very quick play, and it was kind of nice. And I think I'd use it as an addition, definitely. I think if you're an amateur, you could probably just use this as your only application and get away with it.
Yes. Yeah, I did it, like you said, as an addition to Lightroom, because I'm like, just bought into Lightroom too far. But it's amazing. It's amazing.
Yeah, no. And it's only 44 quid, so it's not going to break the bank. And it does an awful lot. So.
And you can use it as an Apple Photos plugin as well, which is
yes, that was excellent. Yeah. We talked over here. Don't say that again.
Oh, you can use it as an Apple Photos plugin. So if you are an amateur like myself and can't really get your head around, you know, Lightroom and Photoshop, etc., just use Photos, use the plugin, and it gives you all the functionality from within Photos itself. So it will actually, if you try to edit a photo in Apple Photos, you can actually use the Luminaire. Plugin and get access to all the functionality. It's really good.
We've got two copies, thanks to MacFun for sending us two review copies. I've given one to Ian Lewis, who's a distinctly talented amateur, and myself to use. And we're going to do two reviews, so it's going to be kind of like keen amateur and or very talented amateur, actually. So that's not fair.
And Doc, you hit the nail on the head. Kevin at MacFun, we actually have our user group meeting at their location, and he talked about what their idea behind this product was, and it was absolutely, they were targeting it as a replacement for Aperture. The only caveat is right now it does not have any DAM stuff in it. It doesn't have digital asset management as part of it, whether it will or not, who knows, but they are, you know, they have been thinking in that direction, so.
I think one of the things that's really cool about these guys, they have a launch bundle, and I just checked a minute ago, you can actually still get access to some of the launch bundle stuff. So what it was in a launch bundle was they gave you $200 or $300 worth of instructional videos to go with it if you bought the launch bundles. And I kind of know what I'm doing, but I'm like, I'm going to just look at some of these videos anyway. There's some great tips in those videos about taking the pictures right in the first place. And I forget the name of the guy who did it, but the name of the series is called Educating Tina. And she's basically an amateur photographer, and she has a pro photographer follow her around and tell her what she's doing and what she's doing wrong. And I just went through a couple of the videos, you know, just yesterday, goofing off. And he has some fantastic tips. He has tips that I've been doing this forever, and I don't even never heard of some of these stuff. So if you go into the store and you press it by now, you might still see the bundle. It's worth the bundle, and it's the same price right now. So $59 US or whatever US said quid.
Another quick tip, if you head to the website, don't just click the buy now button at the top. If you already own any other MacFun product, scroll down to the buy button that's a little bit lower down, and you'll see a click to get additional discount button for existing MacFun users.
What? So I didn't see that.
MacFun product.
I paid full price. That's all right. It's worth it. It's worth it. Absolutely worth it. I don't care.
So you'll get more of a discount. It's 59 right now, but if you have another MacFun product, I think you get an additional discount. I don't know how much it is, but you'll get a little more off.
That's cool. That's very cool. My cool thing is better toolbar. Better touch tool. No, because I'm already using it.
It's wicked, right?
I've got my trackpad out here. Here we go. There we go. See, look, it's working. I've screwed up. I've clicked the wrong button already. But there we go. I've got it, and it's working already. It's easy, and it works. Oh, that's going to change my grubbing like
I can't believe you didn't know about that. Better touch. No. It's been around.
So to get up on speed real quick, go to this thing. It's called Screencast Online. This guy, Don McAllister, does it. He has a video. And then Brett Terpster's website, he got tons of stuff. So between those two guys, you'll be on speed.
Never
heard. That Don guy is really cool. I wish you should get him on the show sometime.
Never heard of him.
He is a Liverpudlian, and my man says for sensibilities don't really like that. But other than that, he's square because he don't like football anyway.
No one here likes football, only you. I mean, Muller supports Birmingham City, for Christ's sake.
Shut up.
All right, don't start. Wait, it's over for us to check. Where can we get a hold of you, Mr. McAllister?
Right, you can find me over at screencastonline.com for the weekly video tutorials. You can also find us on the App Store. Got two apps on the App Store. One's the Screencast Online magazine, a monthly magazine that you can subscribe to. Or if you become a member on the website, you'll get a free copy. And there's also an SEO showcase app, which if you're not a member and you just want the occasional screencast, you can actually go on there. Some free stuff, but you can also buy individual tutorials as well.
Right. Excellent, mate. I've just found out how much it is to buy Better Touch Tool, by the way.
It is. How much is it? It's not expensive.
£5.
£7.
And they haven't done the Brexit thing yet.
Ah.
Just get in there. Get it now before they work out what Brexit is. Adam, where are you, mate?
You can find me over at MacCast.com, MacCast on iTunes, MacCast just about on every other social media, and every week or so on when Jeff Gamet's not out of town for 2 weeks, on the iOS show at theiosshow.com.
And if you've got a Mac, and you've only just recently got a Mac particularly, if you don't subscribe to these two fellas, MacCast and Don on Screencast Online, you're a muppet. Muppet. First thing I did. The first thing I did was listen to the MacCast and subscribe to Screencast Online. That's not a lie. I'm not kissing ass. They know I don't kiss. They know I don't kiss ass.
No.
Everyone knows I don't kiss any ass. And Jock, where are you, mate?
You can find me all over the internet at DOCROCK. Currently on the Offshore Podcast. And I will back up Ewan. I believe I was at Siebel, which is now a defunct show for designers. And this podcasting stuff was kind of new. And I was talking to some dudes. I'm like, what are the podcasts you should listen to? And he goes, well, there's only a couple Mac ones out. And one is by a dude named Sean called The Mac Show. And another one's by some dude, I forget his name, but it's called MacCast. And I started listening to those. I think the year was like 03, maybe 04, before it was even called
Podcast. It would have been 04.
Yeah, before it was even called podcast yet, it was just you clicked on this website and you listened to this link. And about a year later, then Apple came up with podcasts. So Adam's been in the game since Jesus walked in Nazareth.
Don, too.
No, you beat me. Adam, you were my first Mac podcast.
By a little bit. Just by a little bit.
Are you suggesting?
I still remember meeting you at the very first, podcast expo.
That's right. Yeah, you and John Chambers.
You, me, and Victor. Yeah, John Chambers, yeah.
John Chambers. We went to dinner, and I was sat in the back of the car, and you two guys were talking. It was so strange to hear these two voices that I'd heard for, you know, a year or so on podcasts speaking in the car. It was, woo, it's very strange. It's good, though.
Yeah. It's fun.
But he doesn't speak the same. Adam doesn't speak the same as when he speaks on his MacCast. Different.
Yeah.
My kids
he speaks deliberately slow. But you know what's really perfect? Adam's deliberately slow speaking was probably why so many people like him. Comes off really well on a podcaster that lets you move it to like 1.2 to 1.3. It's like perfect. It is so perfect.
After that, loving, my name's Ewan Rankin. You can get me at Ewan Rankin on Twitter and here every week. Next week, it's going to be awesome because Patrice is invading England. Something that his kindred never managed to do. There we go. He's done his European tour. He's done Poland. He's done Romania. And he's trying to get into Britain, but he's not here yet. That'll be next week. I think we're going to change show times as well. If you want to watch the live shows, I think what we're going to do is we're going to push the Mac Show back to its original time, which is 4 p.m. on Fridays, which I know it's never been the original time because it was 3:30. But we're going to go 4 p.m. on Fridays, and then we're going to go for a curry and then come back and do Big Show at 8 p.m. So there you go. All right. Thank you, chaps. We'll see you all again next week, and it should be loads of fun. Thanks for listening.